Thank you for downloading this podcast of Jeff Hill talking about fictional sportsman Alf Tupper at MMU's Institute for Performance Research Symposium on Sporting Lives, held on December the 4th, 2010.
Thanks, Dave. This is Alf Tupper, the tip of the track. Alf Tupper was a fictional middle-distance runner. Stories about him appeared regularly in the British comic Rover from 1949 until the early 1960s. They were continued for the following 30 years in a new title, Victor, though the frequency of them diminished from the early 1980s, and Alf, as a fictional comic hero, finally disappeared in 1992. He was young, around about 19 or 20. He was poor, but he was an outstanding athlete. His athletic success owed nothing to social or family circumstances, education or coaching, especially coaching. Alf was particularly opposed to coaching and to the scientific methods that were being introduced into running at this time. A number of stories make fun of pompous coaches and men in white coats who have scientific ideas about diet. Alf stuck determinedly to his staple diet, fish and chips, and proclaimed about his training, "I train for running by running." He was something of an enfant sauvage who loved to be out in the open air, enjoying nature and just running. I thought about quoting a passage that John quotes in his book, Running Cultures. It's a famous one from Roger Bannister's first 4 minutes, his autobiography of 1955, in which Bannister explains the sort of existential thrill of just getting out there and running. Alf wouldn't have expressed himself in the same sorts of terms that Roger Bannister does, but nevertheless, the feeling of it is the same, I think. Alf wasn't, however, just a runner. He raced, and he relished the competition of the track. The renown of a tough adversary would be met with Alf's habitual challenge, I'll run him. And it meant more than simply compete against him. It promised a draining physical and mental contest of wills, and the devil take the hindmost. Asked about the source of the deep resilience he displayed in his races, Alf says, typically terse, "I just don't like being beat." That's what he says, not beaten, "I just don't like being beat." Given this determination, Tupper's achievements as an athlete were considerable. In his fictional world, Tupper was the equal of all the international stars of his period. Chataway, Ibbotson, Brasher, Peary, Johnson, later Coe, Ovette, Cram. And of course, the first man to achieve a sub-4-minute mile, Roger Bannister. Alf, in fact, went one better than most of these names. He actually did win an Olympic gold medal in the 1500 metres in the Helsinki Games of 1952. As an athlete, he was a committed amateur and worked for his living. In fact, work rather than athletics was the dominant theme in Alf's life. He took great pride in his trade as a welder. And a large number of the stories concern factory and workshop life. The same determination that Alf brought to his running was also evident in the workplace. earnings weren't especially important for him. He sought simply a basic wage. The greater reward for him was a job well done. A recurring feature of the stories is Alf's being set to do a rush order, often working through the night to meet a crucial deadline. And this has a dramatic purpose in the plot because it interacts with Alf's races, many of which have to be run soon after finishing a rush order, when he's tired out. But he rises above his fatigue to perform well in the race, if not winning, coming a very creditable second. Who were the stories aimed at? Let me say a little bit about the publishing context. Rover and Victor were, with their companion titles Wizard, Adventure and Hotspur, published by DC Thompson of Dundee, Scotland, for young male readers, most of whom were probably working-class youths in their teens. DC Thompson titles contained plenty of densely written fiction in which tales of heroism and adventure predominated. Although Alf's heroism bordered at times on the improbable, the stories relied essentially on social rather than magical realism. As an athlete, for example, Alf contrasts with his fictional contemporary Wilson, another DC Thompson hero, whose athletic feats were so extraordinary they demanded a willing suspension of disbelief. Where Alf seemed believable, at least for one endowed with outstanding athletic abilities, Wilson lived in a cave, subsisted on a diet of berries, and was over 100 years old, yet had not aged beyond early manhood. It took a little bit of coming to terms with. Alf, by contrast, in his mundane setting of shabby clothes, cheap lodgings, and wage labour, was a working man who shared an ordinary social world with many of his readers. And the clearest symbol of his ordinariness was seen in his mania for fish and chips. Tupper had originated in the mind of the DC Thompson writer Gilbert Dalton in the aftermath of the 1948 London Olympics, when Dalton had been dismayed at the poor performances there of British athletes and came up with Tupper as a character to try and arouse interest in a younger generation to go into the sport and give it a try and perhaps do well in it. On DC Thompson's part, the aim was fundamentally commercial. Thompson's published a number of leading newspaper titles in Scotland and have done from the beginning of the 20th century. These included the Dundee Courier and the widely read Sunday Post. All were conservative in tone, if not conservative with a large C in party political terms. In the rest of Britain, Thompson's were best known by the late 1930s, chiefly for their output of comics. The Beano and the Dandy, for example, were popular among early and pre-teen readers, and Rover, which had started in 1922, and Victor, which began in 1961, had, as I suggested, a strong appeal for adolescents. At its peak in the mid-1950s, Rover was selling somewhere in the region of 280,000 copies in the UK, while the comic strip Victor, at its launch in the early 60s, ran to close on 500,000. Now, a little bit about another aspect of Alf Tupper as a sport hero in juvenile fiction. More than most such sport heroes, I think particularly American ones, which Michael Oriard has written a great deal about, Tupper conveyed a political significance in both his work and his sport. And I think this is one of the most interesting things about the character. though it's very difficult to pin down exactly how the political significance might have been interpreted by his readership. I think his chosen sport was important. In general, athletics in Britain, under the rule of the three A's, had developed an image of social exclusiveness, reinforced by its strong amateur ethos and its long-standing hostility to professionalism. Something that's conveyed, I think, quite well in the film by Hugh Hudson, Chariots of Fire. Alf himself, of course, was an amateur, but not an amateur like those who wielded influence in British athletics, who were often upper class. We saw a picture during Jean's presentation of Marquess of Exeter, who would be a good example of that type. They were what Alf would call toffs, and it was their influence in the sport that Alf fought. It brought into his running a streak of class conflict. "I'd like to have a go at the swanks," he says. The swanks, referring to those who think they're good and think they're entitled to win because of who they are and what they are. Many of Alf's opponents, though excellent athletes, are snobs. They look down on Alf because of his humble background. And toffs, who are also swanks and snobs, are the object of his especial dislike. The names of some of these characters alone speak volumes. We have, for example, the Honourable Piers Mornington, Cambridge University sprinter, referred to as the light blue streak. Echoes there of failed missile systems of the late 1950s, as well as various other things. There's Gerard Tarn, who was not only an outstanding athlete, but ran in the United States and had the benefit of university resources and support of a kind that Alf would not even dream about. And then there was the haughty Lou Murdoch, who travels from meeting to meeting in a customised motor caravan provided by his rich father and driven by a personal masseur. Alf travels from meeting to meeting on the bus or walks. Snobbery isn't confined to British athletes. Overseas adversaries are equally likely to offend. A recurring rivalry is with Skimba Roo. Skimba Roo is the snobbish son of a Zulu chief. And Lash Lanigan, who's a know-all American, and a little bit like one of those American stereotypes that music hall comedians loved to make fun of. They think they know everything, but in the end, they know nothing. Tupper's athletics world is ridden with these kinds of inequalities and unfairnesses. And often the swanks will resort to deceitful tactics to gain advantage. You can't trust them. Their social standing doesn't guarantee fair play. So the sport seems to work in favour of the haves against the have-nots. Readers are left in little doubt, I think, that these representatives of the British establishment occupy a privileged position at the expense of those who, either because they lack the financial means or the extraordinary physical abilities of people like Tupper, suffer from missed opportunities, their potential talent and contribution to the nation overlooked and wasted. So within the text, I think, there's a discourse of modernisation and reform at work. In The Factory, likewise, Alf's dedication to his job might make him seem like a model worker, but actually he's far from being a boss's man. He displays all the truculence and independence we would associate with the craft tradition in British industry. Alf's pride in his work includes also a strong sense of independence in the workplace. He's a skilled worker. The skills are his. He is in control of his job. And he has a complete lack of deference to those who are set above him as his nominal superiors. Men of whatever position are addressed as Mr. or maybe mate. And they're judged purely by their competence, not by their titles or their background or their social position. So the stories have little of that social conservatism that George Orwell claimed to have observed in boys' comics of an earlier era, in titles like The Magnet, particularly in the Billy Bunter stories. Equally, though, I think it would be stretching a point to suggest that Alf is a subversive figure, and I think when we get into that sort of territory, it becomes rather difficult. Alf is a workman and an athlete, stands up for his rights. But there's little in the stories of any sense of class solidarity that we might associate otherwise with the skilled worker's mentality, historically expressed through independent trade unionism and the labour movement. Alf is not a collective being. He prefers to plough a lone furrow, solving problems by individual effort. In what has often been described as an age of affluence, the 1950s going into the 1960s, he also cuts an odd figure, a puritanical teenage role model, giving his all to work and sport, nothing else, little time left over for any fripperies, no sex, no rock and roll, none of the spending habits recorded in Mark Abrams' classic 1959 study of teenage consumer spending. So I think in the final analysis, Alf is something of an enigma. He's aware of unfairness and injustice on the track and in life, but without the means of effectively combating them, other than by going out and winning races.
Thank you, Jeff.